Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I like to think that All Sides brings out ideas that matter, but that's only half the equation when it comes to TEDx Columbus. The founders are determined to both study ideas and also change how people share them. The local TEDx franchise has found footing as well in a variety of contexts. Next week, the worldwide TED Women event will include a local lineup, TEDx Columbus Women. Coming up, we'll hear from two of those presenters. Joining us now is TEDx Columbus and TEDx Columbus Women founder and organizer Ruth Milligan. And for the love of Pete, welcome to the show. And please tell us once again what TED is, what TEDx Columbus is, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, thanks for having me back, Anne.
You're welcome.
It's great to be here. We always have fun. So TED was a conference started now 32 years ago by a guy that wanted to have interesting people to dinner to share their ideas, but he knew they'd never come. So he had this conference and he called it TED, Technology, Entertainment, and Design. And he put it in Silicon Valley or between Silicon Valley and Hollywood. And so he encompassed all those letters. And then in 2006, a new owner of the TED conference put all the talks online on TED.com and they started getting worldwide attention. And from there, they started getting invitations for move the TED conference to different places. And they said in 2009, no way, we're not moving. We'll start this license program called TEDx, which brings us here today.
And you're one of the first.
Right. So Columbus was the 35th city to have a TEDx event, which is what we still call TEDx
around
Columbus.
Around the world.
Around the world. Mm-hmm. Since then, I think the number is there's been 57,000 talks, about 14,000 events in 1,500 cities. They thought they would be successful if there were like 35 events. But we were the 35th event. I remember just counting that year, kind of what number we were, just for fun. And we're now probably, Nancy Kramer and I are still probably one of the last women standing, the original curators.
Right.
Because we've just applied for our seventh license.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about TEDx Columbus Women, which will have another event on May 28th in conjunction with the worldwide TED Women event that occurs that day. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Coming up, we're going to hear from a couple of presenters at the TEDx Columbus Women event. Joining me right now, Ruth Milligan, TEDx Columbus organizer and co-founder, along with Nancy Kramer. The TEDx Columbus Women has gotten a lot bigger than it was about a year and a half ago, the one I attended over at the Columbus Foundation. Tell us what's changed. What's going on?
So the TED Women event started, this is the fourth time they've done it in 5 years. And it's a global platform. It's curated by a different group of people inside TED. Pat Mitchell from the Paley Center for Media curates it. And so for the first 3 years, we've live streamed their conference. And in December 2013, we decided to add a few local talks. And so we did five sort of 6-minute talks at the Columbus Foundation. We had about 170 people there. And we looked at the audience and we looked at how fast the response was and thought something's missing inside our community that we could sell out this event in a day and have lots of people want to speak. And so when they announced the TED Women event for this May, they sort of skipped a year. We thought, let's try and see if the response will follow and do it a little bigger, a lot.
A little bigger. And how much bigger?
So we'll have 500 to 600 people in the audience. And we decided to have a full TEDx program in the morning, which is our two speakers here are two of 15 that we'll showcase. We'll have two sessions. And we are doing a wide variety of topics that all sort of either impact women or are by women doing interesting things or around the issue of story. The theme is Own It, the Power in Our Story, because we really believe that women don't own their story like men do. So that was one topic and one set of talks that we curated. The second were topics that we really believed were important, trending conversations for women. And they involved human trafficking, sexual assault, gender issues, and technology. And then the third group are a few of women just doing really interesting things. And so that's how those speakers came to be. We had over 80 nominations, and a very diverse group of people decided which 10 or 12 would be in there. And then we have a few performers always.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about TEDx Columbus Women. If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You had 80 nominations. How are speakers chosen?
So first we take a cut on, did they tell us what their idea was? So if somebody just rambles and doesn't tell us their idea, they're not going to move through the process. And I say that openly to the world, that if you want to give a TEDx talk, make sure you know what your idea is. I want to be able to see it in the first minute that you talk. And then we look for topics that support the theme, owning your story. And then we look for things that are trending, conversations that are trending in the community. As I said last week to someone, we like to reflect and elevate conversations that are happening in the community or help to elevate those that should be happening. And so then we go through a list of topics, which we did. We put up on a whiteboard and said, if we have this event and we don't address these topics, it was a failure. And those topics included issues of gender, assault, human trafficking, some really tough things, but then also some not so difficult ones around tech. But some of those conversations are difficult around women accessing technology, women becoming technology leaders, more importantly. And so we start to cut and decide that way. And then there's just a big matrix and make sure there's diversity on all levels, hot, cold, happy, sad, funny, not.
It's like, though, when you're talking about 500 or 600 people coming to this event and it's a whole morning. It's not a whole day. It's a whole morning. It's almost like you're putting together a whole nother TEDx Columbus event.
We did.
Okay.
We did. No, okay. Make no mistake. This is.
Can I take your pulse?
And Nancy, who's not involved in this event in the organizing, she'll be actually hosting a conversation with Teresa Flores on stage about a follow-up from her talk of 2011 on what's gone on with the soap initiative around human trafficking.
Kind of a follow-up.
Right. She kind of looked at me and said, do you really want to do two big events in one year? And I said, I feel like there's this inertia around most events, and this was my point of view, we have so many great women events in town, but none of them really allow for conversation and dialogue. They show up, hear a great message from a great organization, raise some money, and go home. Mm-hmm. And the only conversation that happens is with the high donors that get to come early. And because we don't do that, because everyone gets all the talks, everyone gets to have the same access to conversation, I felt like that's why we sold out that event a year and a half ago.
Yeah, that's a part of the whole TED talk is how you engage and how people talk about what they've heard.
Right. So we have very long breaks. We want the stranger next to you to feel comfortable engaging with conversation with you around that topic. You don't need to know their name or their title or where they've come from. And it really democratizes the ability for us to have important conversations about, you know, trending critical things.
Venue is important.
Yes. This venue isn't the best for that.
It's a beautiful venue, Southern Theater.
I will say that it's the best for the speakers. They're going to have a great time on this. I mean, there's no better venue for the speakers. But for the audience after the speakers, you know, being able to mingle and mix, that's why we're actually taking them to the Columbus Commons for lunch. And we're going to have hopefully a 500-person picnic. So we're telling everyone to wear jeans. Be comfortable.
And bring an umbrella so it doesn't rain.
That's right.
Because if you don't bring an umbrella,
right.
It'll rain.
And then I should just finish by saying we'll come back after lunch and watch the live stream of the Global TED Women Conference. We'll pick two sessions and we'll go back to the theater and have a watching party from in the afternoon. So there'll no more live talks in the morning. In the afternoon, sorry.
Competition to be a speaker the same as competitive as it is for TEDx Columbus?
It kind of blew us away how many people did apply. We had no idea the interest level. I mean, I sensed it, but we proved it.
So what distinguishes, though, when I hear you talk about the topics that are going to be that are being prepared for this one, what distinguishes them? What distinguishes TEDx Columbus from TEDx Columbus Women?
So this particular curatorial team that we put together, we posed the question, what's important to women right now? Where we wouldn't have asked that question for the fall event.
Uh-huh.
And we also wanted to make sure we were showcasing some women specifically doing very interesting things. And we wouldn't ask that question for the fall event. For the fall event, we would ask who's doing interesting things, regardless of gender. And we would ask, what's trending in general? And our fall event theme this year is disruption. So you can see how broad it is versus the power in your story. So it has to do with the theme and the purpose. And in this case, we did not only pick women, as you'll know from our guest here today. And we thought that was important to make sure people knew this wasn't just for women. There will be men attending in the audience. We encourage them to attend because they're part of the conversation, too.
Coming up, we're going to hear from Larry Smith. He's the founder of Smith Magazine and the Six Word Memoir Project. And I started a Six Word Memoir stream on my Facebook page. You can do it on the All Sides Facebook page or mine, wherever you want. Also on Twitter, if you want to check that out. What can you summarize your life in six words? The fact is, I've done about 50 of these six-word memoirs. I don't know if that counts or not, but give it a go. Six words, tell your life in six words. 614-292-8513 if you want to call it in, or you can email it in at allsides@wosu.org. If you do so, then we'll read it out loud on the air. So participate. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. The next iteration of TEDx Columbus, that is TEDx Columbus Women, is next week. Still with us is TEDx Columbus co-founder and organizer Ruth Milligan. Joining us now is one of the scheduled presenters. He founded the online storytelling community Smith Magazine, home of the Six Word Memoir Project, now a best-selling book series, board game, live event series, and lesson plan in schools across the world. Larry Smith, welcome to the show.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Ann. Thank you.
So how did you make it to the TEDx Columbus Women's stage this year?
Well, Ruth may have heard one of my own six-word memoirs, which is about growing up in a family of women. And it's very much about my sister's story more than my own, though the theme is own your story. And that is two sisters never left seat up. It wasn't done in my house. But really, in truth, the theme is the power of story, owning your story. And that is truly the heart and soul of what the Six Word Memoir Project is about having this simple way to start telling your story in just six words. And really that parameter, it fuels creativity. It doesn't stop it. That's what was interesting for me when I started this 8 years ago. And from there, once you start writing a six-word story of your life, you can open it up and look for those words from someone else which say, tell me more. And you can write one six-word memoir, as you found out this morning, Ann, you know, posting them to Facebook. And when you get the bug, you can write 10 and 20. And on my website, sixwordmemoirs.com, we have what we call power users who have written 5 and 10,000 six-word stories of their life.
I loved it when I posted it on Facebook this morning that, you know, three or four people right away liked it. And then, but they didn't post anything. And I waited and waited. And then they started to post them. And it was sweet that they were thinking about it.
It's interesting. When I do talks, and we're going to do a version of this actually at lunch at the TEDx Columbus Women talk, I always end the talk with some sort of what I call a six-word slam. Could be in a high school auditorium, at a corporate setting, could be in a classroom of some sort. And I say, okay, I've talked a little bit about what a six-word memoir is, about the power of concise storytelling, the power of sharing your story, that simple thing of just telling a story, even in six words. Now let's go around the room and do a six-word slam. And to look at what happens in these auditoriums or alleys or arts festivals, it's like watching popcorn popping. One, then two, and it speeds up, and then everyone wants to grab the mic. And it's so wonderful just to see self-expression just in six words just fill the room.
What do we know about why such a brief, such brevity generates creativity?
Well, I've learned a lot. For one thing, it was an accidental project. I had started a storytelling site called Smith Mag, which still goes, about all sorts of storytelling. But I didn't have any parameters. And we got good stuff about life-changing moments, about breakups. But when I, about 10 months into it, I said, well, tell the story of your life in just 6 words. And that was an idea borrowed from the famous Hemingway legend. As I'm sure your listeners know, there's a story that Hemingway was once challenged to write a whole novel in just 6 words. And he wrote, "For Sale, Baby Shoes, Never Worn," the 6-word novel. So giving it a personal twist, I called it the 6-word memoir. And I really didn't know what would happen. It was originally just a 1-month contest that was going to end after a month. And I was going to give the winner an iPod, which was a big deal in 2006. But they just kept coming and coming. And I've learned a lot over the years about why it works. For one, blank pages are very scary, right? For, you know, we're all not dentists or doctors or firemen, but we all are writers in one way or another. But when you can have a blank page, writer or non-writer, it can be scary. Fill that page with 6 words, not so scary. Don't like what you wrote? Cross it out. Like what you wrote? Keep going. Write hundreds. Thousands. The teens treat it like a daily diary. Instead of hiding it under their bed, they post it onto us, 6wordmemoirs.com, what's happening. Their lives change by the hour. So we know it's a way to solve the blank page problem. We know it's addictive. You saw that this morning. Mm-hmm. Once you get the 6-word bug, you know, it's hard to stop. You want to bring it to your dinner table, perhaps your congregation, to get to the essence of faith, team building. So it's addictive. And it's empowering. Even in this age of Instagram and Facebook and a menu of media that's almost overwhelming, to say, listen, let's just start with 6 words. Tell your story. A lot of people don't want to mess around with all the tech stuff. But, you know, this isn't a high-tech project. You don't need the website to do it. Just to share that story, those 6 words, something changes in you as you share the 6 words, and something changes in the person who receives those 6 words. When someone posts this 6-word memoir to the site or around their dinner table, when they write, "Mom's Alzheimer's, she forgets, I remember." You know, on the site you see comments. Oh, you know, my aunt had Alzheimer's. I know what you're going through. People respond. And maybe someone is feeling the same thing but don't have the courage to post those words. They're feeling something. They're feeling, I'm connected to others. And we all know this, right? But somehow that power of sharing those words, however you do it, on the air, on a website, on a napkin, it changes something.
This, what Larry Smith does, Ruth Milligan, sort of encapsulates everything about TED Talks, TEDx Columbus.
Well, one of the things, too, that it encapsulates, which we love, is that, you know, Larry just moved to Columbus. And we like to think of Columbus, obviously, as open and smart. And I love the fact that, you know, our theme and him being here and there's a place. And not only just about the fact that he's talking about story and evokes conversation, but that we can see fit. This isn't a hard city in which to, you know, make connections and find a place to share your story. So
you have a relationship with TED, too, right?
Well, I have a I've never done a TED talk.
Right.
I've never done a TEDx talk. And I will have to say that having watched other friends do TEDx talks, not in Columbus, but in other places, Brooklyn, San Francisco, where I used to live, Ruth is not messing around. It is a very serious operation. I've never seen an operation this serious in all
That's
my
rude.
Years. And I've known a lot of the world of TED. The relationship I've had is simply that at some point a few years ago, TED Books said, hey, would you like to do a book of 6-word memoirs? I do books with a traditional publisher, HarperCollins and then St. Martin's. They said, we want to do an e-book, technology, entertainment, design, right? I thought, okay, what book would I want to do with TED? And so I did a dream that I didn't know any other avenue to do, and it was a great time to do it, which was a book of 120 illustrated 6-word memoirs solely by students. And there had never been a better place than TED Books for that. And I'll be sharing some of those 6-word memoirs by students on May 28th.
How do you prepare for – you said Ruth Milligan isn't fooling around, meaning she makes you prepare, right? Isn't that what you're talking about?
It's six words, by the way.
Ruth Milligan isn't fooling around.
Do you find you talk in 6 words now? You speak and spit 6-word?
I do, but more than speaking in 6 words, I can hear 6 words in the air.
Okay.
You know, Melissa said something. I'm like, hey, Melissa, that's 6 words. I have been admittedly been caught in the ocean on vacation in Mexico, and I think of one, and my wife sees my fingers rising above the water, and I just hear, you're on vacation, stop counting. But I can't stop counting. I think I hear them better than I think them.
So how do you prepare for a talk for TEDx Columbus women?
Well, you know, it's hard because I speak the gospel of concise storytelling and getting down to the essence of who you are and what matters most. But to explain my project, which has had a wild journey in 8 years, in 10 minutes or less is very, very hard. So Ruth has forced me to do something that I've been asking people to do for a long time, which is get down to the essence of what six-word memoirs mean, why it's important, and what would have happened if it didn't happen. What's at risk if six words didn't happen for you personally and, you know, for the larger society?
That is my favorite question.
That is a great question.
What's at stake if somebody doesn't hear your message?
Right. And one thing that we didn't bring up earlier, Ruth, is the difference of time, the time differences between the speakers. That's pretty, I think, a pretty important component. Because if you want to translate it to the print, not six-word memoir, you know, aside, you know, space is of the essence. Time is of the essence.
I was joking with someone recently. They said they're about to give a presentation to their board. It was a company presentation. And I said, how long do you have? She said, I don't know, maybe 45, maybe 60 minutes. And I was like, I had a heart attack. And I was like, gosh, the difference between 3 and 5 minutes in my world is a big deal,
yes,
let alone 45 to 60. So in this particular venue, no one's giving over a 12-minute presentation. The limit is 18. That was the attention span that the founder thought the audience would have. And in fact, 18 is about how long a sitcom is when you take out the commercials.
Right.
In this particular day, we wanted to pack in a lot of speakers. And so we decided that they'd all be sort of 12, 10, 8. There's a few fives.
Mm-hmm.
And even the 5-minute talks are spending a whole lot of time working on,
because it takes a long time
to figure out what you
want to shorten your message.
And I guess that we should remind your listeners that, you know, what happened to Jim White, which we haven't talked about, when Jim White's talk went on TED.com. So we had a TEDx talk last fall, invited to go over to TED.com. And when his talk, it was 10 minutes, was on our site, it was 10, he had 5,000 views. And as of today, he has over 1 million. And between the YouTube site and the TED.com site. And what that means is that what you're preparing for, when I called him and I said, hey, Jim, your talk has been invited to move over to the big site. He said, what does that mean, Ruth? And I said, oh, maybe about 500,000 views. And I was wrong. I was way underestimating. It was really meant 1 million views. So that's one of the reasons why people know there's a lot of weight in preparing, because their talk could go really viral and it could make a big difference.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. If you would like to participate in the six-word memoir project, you can email them to us at allsides@wosu.org, or you can call them up, 614-292-8513, or you can check out our Facebook page and post them there. Here's a four from the post on my Facebook page today from Julie. It was always about the why. From Bryant, it was in tune when purchased. From Timothy, began, struggled, failed, sought redemption, rose. And from Susan, I've been faking it, don't tell. So if you have a six-word memoir you'd like to share, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. I'd like to bring in our other guest right now, Melissa Crum. She's founder of Mosaic Education Network, will be a presenter at the TEDx Columbus Women event on Thursday, May 28th at the Southern Theater. If you want more information about that, you can go to our website. There's a link there for you to learn more. Melissa Crum, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
I just wanted you to share. I thought I can't keep you apart any longer. what's your six-word memoir?
Oh, I didn't know you were going to. I should have been thinking about this. I have one soon.
Have one soon. But, you know, I was reading things you've written. You talk about multicultural critical reflective practice. I was really enjoyed reading about what that means. Is that six words?
I was going to say.
You talk about.
I think it's five.
You talk
four.
About multicultural,
we need
critical, reflective,
multicultural critical reflective practice.
There you go.
And,
we go.
And why?
Well, MCRP is a process that a colleague and I created that's an ongoing process that helps educators think about how they're thinking about the diverse communities that they're working with. And we use contemporary art as a medium to help them think through that. So oftentimes, educators are given skills to manage the classroom, to prepare curriculum, et cetera. But rarely do we ask educators to really think about who they're teaching and how they're thinking about them and really dig deep in any socialization that they've had that guides how they interact with their students. And that's what our process does.
What I read that you had written was about the woman who called herself an egg.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a really great example of what you do try to do. Can you relate that in 6 words? No, I'm just kidding. But I thought it was really interesting what you did, because I was reading it at first and I didn't know where you were going. And then you got me there and it was enlightening.
So we were at a conference that was focused on social justice. And we were sitting and we were listening to this waitress who was telling us about this kimchi dessert thing, right?
And so Which, that's not even possible. Go ahead.
But the way she was kind of justifying her review was she, as a Caucasian female, what considered herself Asian internally, right? So because she was around so much Asian food that she could give a great review, so she deemed herself an egg. Although she's white on the outside, she's Asian on the inside. And we were all critical diversity scholars sitting at the table. We're like, we need to really think about how we would implement this MCRP on an everyday basis without attacking her, right? And having her really think about how she's thinking about diversity, and can you really embody that, and what does that mean? And it was a really interesting conversation to really challenge her about culture and what that means when she says things like that.
And what it tells about her story.
Right. Right. And so we aligned it with other metaphors like Oreo or other types of ways in which an Oreo, for example, is how African-Americans are sometimes called when they're clearly black on the outside, but they assumptions that they haven't adopted whatever assumptions are around being black on the inside. So they're then white or Eurocentric on the inside, whatever that means, right, through mannerisms and words, and how that can be offensive and limiting, and really removes complexity from individuals. And how can we make sure that we don't do that?
And when somebody calls himself an egg, white on the outside, yellow on the inside, they're calling themselves that, and somehow that's okay if they, or there's the assumption, well, I didn't mean to hurt anybody's feelings, I'm calling myself that, but that's not what it's about.
Well, it's not so much about, oh, you don't have the license to use this language. Mm-hmm. We're not really semantic right. police, right? So mm-hmm. it's really about, why do you think that that's an appropriate way of describing yourself? Like, what does that mean to say you internalize someone else's identity? What does that mean also for the identity you grew up with? How can you not also be white on the inside, whatever that means, how you've grown up? You're somehow now disassociating yourself mm-hmm. from whatever experiences you've had as that your parents raised you. What does that mean when we do that? We can't just kind of put on culture and then take it off, right?
Why can't you just say, I really, really like Asian food and I eat it a lot, so I'm an expert on it.
And I work at an Asian restaurant, right. So like, can I just leave it there and that's okay?
Well, what do you think? What do you know about why people feel like they have to take that extra step to identify with?
You know, I really find it... I find it most often with people who feel like they need to kind of spice up whatever their existence is, right? So if they don't connect with a specific kind of culture, if they don't connect with their history or ancestry or something, they feel like they can kind of grab onto something that's kind of tangible that they can kind of put on and take off. We see this in host of things, whether it be hip hop or yoga or whatever it might be, where we're like, we can kind of put it on and take it off, but are we really thinking about the essence of where that kind of comes from and the history that comes from that? And what does that mean when we can just kind of put it on and kind of spice up our identity and assert ourselves in society in a way that says that we are the authority of whatever this thing we've kind of put on, then we can take it off because we don't necessarily have the consequences that come with that identity either, right? And so we think about who gets to do that and who doesn't get to do that, and being really self-reflective about that. And that's what we do with our process, and really help people think that through.
Ruth Milligan?
I just wanted to add why we picked Melissa for the TEDx Columbus Women event. When she submitted her nomination, she actually brought in a personal story, which we haven't revealed here yet. And that's a really big part of our process of making sure that there's a little vulnerability on the stage, that you're bringing your whole self. It's not just your science. It's not just your research. And Melissa comes from this comes to this place very authentically. It's an overused word, but one that's appropriate here. And she's got, and I won't reveal it because we'll wait till you have to come to the event unless you want to know it now. But I think that's an important part. And so what she's speaking of might be the research and the work she's done in her life. But she's coming to this place from a very personal point of view. So
this show is many things, but we are not a spoiler. We will not spoil TEDx Columbus Women. We got a few more six-word memoirs just came in hot off the press. If you would like to join this conversation, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. Now for those six-word memoirs from Holly, you do not get second chances. From Kathy, been there, done that, never again. Paige, this is the life I wanted. Brian, alcohol may have been a factor. Mary, in every day, a new opportunity. All of those go to something that you talk about what you've learned from the six-word memoirs, Larry Smith, and we'll talk about that in just a minute. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. The next iteration of TEDx Columbus, that is TEDx Columbus Women, is next week. It will precede the worldwide TED event, TEDx TED Women event that will be broadcast globally. Still with us is TEDx Columbus co-founder and organizer Ruth Milligan and the founder of the Six Word Memoir Project, Larry Smith, who will give a talk at the TEDx Columbus Women. And also with us, Melissa Crum, founder of Mosaic Education Network. If you have a question or comment for any of our guests, you're welcome to join the show. If you would like to share your Six Word Memoir, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Let's go back, Melissa, to the title of your organization, Mosaic Education Network. It's not just informally that way. You do work formally with teachers.
Right, right.
So what do they do? I mean, what do you teach them?
Well, do a couple of things. So one thing is that we help teachers create a community-based and arts-based curriculum. So a lot of times teachers don't live in the communities in which they serve, and they have some great ideas about how to make the curriculum relevant for their students. So we work as somewhat of a liaison to community partners who can support them in having these really great creative ideas and implement that in the classrooms and make it make sense for the students. We also do diversity training where we help teachers really think about what are their curriculum choices, what are their pedagogical choices, and how can that support the students, the diverse students in their classroom. We know that the K-12 system has doubled in its diversity in the last 30 years. We also know that 22% of students K-12 are living in poverty. We know that 10% of students are English language learners, but yet the teacher population remains majority female, white, middle class, and monolingual. So we know that our educators aren't necessarily living or among the community of the students that they work with. So we really want to help them make that bridge and build those relationships, not only with the students through curriculum and the way they interact with them, but also with the communities that are around.
So what does that look like? Can you give me an example of something a teacher would do or say differently?
So an example of a curriculum would be something that I did with Lyndon McKinley STEM, and we actually have a screening today.
Here in Columbus.
Yes, uh-huh. Here in Columbus. They did a documentary project on the Lyndon neighborhood. And so we had a group of 13 eighth graders, and we had a really awesome teacher, Roderick Watson, who said, I really want to do something really interesting with these students. I'm not quite sure. I know I want to have to do something around social justice. So I helped him think about, you know, how are you thinking about these students? How are you thinking about the community? What do you think they need? And then have the students really think about what is it that you want to learn? And so they ultimately learn about their community, and they did a project, and they learned things around environmental racism. They learned things around how they can be activists in their community and learn about the rich history of their space. And the teacher did, too. So that means that the teacher now sees this space a little differently, sees the students a bit differently, and allows the teacher to have see the community a bit more complex, as well as the students see the complexity of the space they're in as well.
Larry Smith, let's talk about the value of knowing your story. It sounds sort of simple. Everybody knows their story. What's the value of sharing your story and knowing your story?
Well, there's a value in knowing your story, and there's obviously value in sharing your story. But I feel like there's this question we all ask each other. We're asked in school. We ask each other all our lives, who am I? That's a very obvious question that's often very hard to answer. And one way you can figure out who you are is to ask someone else who they are. So my whole origin story of six words and wanting to create a storytelling website where anyone could share a story is by realizing I'd never asked my grandfather for his story, which was silly because I was a journalist at the time. What else am I supposed to do but ask questions? And he reluctantly answered, and then he kept talking and talking, and I thought, well, what if it was a really easy way for anyone to share a story? And this is before, you know, this is 2006, this was a while ago. But the value of knowing your story is a value to understand your place in the world around you.
I thought about asking that question of Larry, Melissa Crum, because I thought it was wonderful that the kids get out and understand where they live. It sounds so simple.
Right, right. And I think communities like Lyndon, they get told what their community is. They get told how they should be thinking about the space that they're in and the people who live there. But what happens when we offer them some new routes, right? Some new avenues into thinking about where they are and talking to the people who might not get the limelight, right? The activists, the educators, the other folks in the community who may or may not have degrees, who may or may not be certified, but they have a wealth of knowledge. And what happens when the students kind of tap into that and then they bring those alternative educators into the school and help the teachers who don't live there, who aren't there often outside of school hours. What happens when they start thinking about that community a bit differently?
Richard in Columbus, you have a six-word memoir. Hi, Richard.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
Yes, the six words that when I first read this a couple years ago that jumped in my head were outwardly dad's smile, inside mom's melancholy.
Interesting.
I have this dynamic tension of being friendly, but I'm probably more sadder, more moody on the inside.
You know, Richard, I wear these six-word memoir T-shirts. I'm wearing one now, big hair, big heart, big hurry, which doesn't work so well on radio, but the hair is big. And one of my other T-shirts I think you can relate to, I wrote it when my son was 3 months old, and it was, "So much crying, the baby too." Because my wife and I were just so overwhelmed, and I walk around with this T-shirt, and I just get these nods, especially mother dads, like, I feel you, brother. So I do feel you.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Richard. And Melissa Crum, have you created your six-word memoir yet?
Larry helped me out.
Okay.
So it's, I'm fulfilling my public radio dream. I get to be on, I listen to you all the time. Now I'm here.
That's kind of sweet. Did you do one?
I did one on your show, on your Facebook page.
Oh, okay. Said, all right. Did I read it?
On my way. See you soon.
I have one for Ruth. I have one for Ruth.
That. Larry wrote one for me today.
Okay.
I think I wrote it down here, and it says, oh, where'd it go? Ruth, Ruth isn't messing around. Ruth Milligan is not fooling around.
Or if I could put words in your mouth, Ruth, since you've put words in mine, or helped me with my words, I will make your story better.
Nice.
Very generous.
And I think I wrote mine was, I used to write, now I talk, then I talked. Once I think what I would say differently is I used to write, now I listen. So anyways, it just makes me think. We have one for email from Anki. Ethiopia, Swedish, Ohio, mimic, octopus, more. All right.
Dolly-esque six words.
Wow. We have a few Dolly-esque. Email from Jen. I never see the banana peels.
Oh, I love that. And see, so Jen is invoking this imagery. We all immediately can go there with her. And that's one of the things that makes a great six-word memoir.
Yes. Email from Jim. Mom angelic, dad not so much. And from Amy on Facebook, how about five? Oh, brevity is an art form. Well, that was 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So brevity is an art form. Why is that? Ruth, you really struggle with a lot of the people that you're helping prepare to keep it short.
Right. We have shorter attention spans. A lot of what we say isn't necessary. Sometimes it's redundant. We don't need to repeat ourselves. Really, what we want to say, we can get out in 1 or 2 minutes if you really have a concise, thoughtful idea. And so you give you 10 more to explain it. That's generous in our world. So, you know, I spend a lot of time with people figuring out what really matters to the audience and that question, what's at stake for them if they don't hear your message? And the answer needs to be pretty quick for them to pay attention.
And so, like Larry Smith, in going through that particular kind of process to prepare for this, what did you learn?
You know, I think the idea of getting your message down is so important. But here's the thing. I think, you know, at TEDx Columbus, women, wherever you are, you know, if you tell your story in 6 words, in 6 minutes, in 10 minutes, that story in of itself needs to work. It needs to teach the listener something, make the listener think. But what you want later is tell me more. Whether you're going to look that person up on the web or you're going to talk to them at the break or find them, tell me more. So I like to call 6 words. Some people say, well, isn't that ADD culture, Twitter and Facebook? You're all ruining society. And I know that's not the case because more people are writing than ever before. But I like to call it AD deep. You know, it's short, but it's deep and it's mindful and it's meaningful.
Mm-hmm. The other day we were – I'm sorry, Dave. This is an apology to my husband. We were – getting ready for bed, and there's this old plastic chair in our bathroom that needed to go away a long time ago, and Dave sat down on it and it broke.
Sorry, Dave.
And my son was in the bathtub and my daughter was brushing her teeth, and we all had this really funny moment because he's like sort of one-legged on the chair, and it, you know, we pull it out, and I grabbed a piece of paper that was next to my bed, and just for fun, because we had just talked that day, I said, what's your six-word memoir, kids, about this incident? And so I made them think about 6 words to describe it, and my son came out with plastic chair plus dad equals tragedy. But, you know, for a 9-year-old, it was my test, right? Like, I was like, I got to practice this out. I'm always talking about my speakers. I'm their biggest advocate after the, you know, during and after the event. I become part of their team. I mean, I'm constantly sharing things with them. And I thought I need to test this out. And to a 9-year-old, it was a fun game of like, what are the most concise words that can just describe what just happened right there?
So. And on the process question, you know, I think the speakers that are attracted to TEDx and that Ruth finds and Nancy finds, you know, we really love our projects. We have a lot to say. This process of really thinking about this whole journey we've all been on, Melissa, myself, the other speakers, to get it down to what it really means to us, it's a question no one's ever really asked me, you know, to really get it down. It has been incredibly hard, and it will remain incredibly hard.
Ironically,
every moment from
right.
now until May 28th.
What about you, Melissa Crum? What has the process of preparing for TEDx Columbus Women taught you about what you do and about yourself?
Well, Ruth has been joking with me with my 10-page outline, which
outline.
Somehow is going to get to 8 minutes.
It did.
But it did.
So, that's why you're here.
Right. So it's definitely concision is a challenge, right? Especially when you've been asked to write and you have written, 200, 300 pages on your topic or whatnot. And how do you get that down? And that means really thinking about what is, like Larry was saying, what's at the crux of it? And keeping Ruth in my mind with what's at risk, right? If somebody doesn't hear, what do you really need them to digest and make it digestible, right? Make it so that it makes sense, that it resonates and they can apply it. And so that's really, that's been the challenge, is really making sure that it makes sense to them and they can use it tomorrow.
We did interviews with 5 of the TEDx Ohio State speakers that went through our coaching process and asked them afterwards what they learned. And every single one of them said, I'll never present the same way. I learned the power of how to tell a story, even when I've been taught not to, because my whole life has been judged on publications and presentations.
And length.
And length. And, did I get my publication title down? And I learned a lot about myself and being able to be vulnerable and really bring forth what I care about. I'll always ask a speaker, what's your passion and why are you here? I don't want to just hear your information. I want to know a little bit about what brings you here, too. So, and these folks have done that, which is why they're here today.
Melissa Crum, is it going to change how you present in the future?
Absolutely. It gives me a little bit more confidence. I don't have a cards or sheets as a
that's right.
There's no notes.
There's no notes.
No cheating.
But also, I don't have to memorize it either, right, as far as verbatim, right? It really just makes me get to thinking about a story and how that would logically kind of flow and make sense. And so, no, I definitely won't present the same.
So when people present at a TEDx Columbus event, they're not memorizing.
No, it's beyond. I say it's the other side of memorization. We make them, this Thursday they'll show up at, every one of them will come to my office for a final content review. And everything's done. Everything should have been done a week ago with what gets in and what gets out of the talk. And mm-hmm. now we're just about this word embodiment, right? We're just, you know it, you own it. Let's just get up there and have a conversation about it. It really is the other side of memorization. And those that memorize aren't really sort of have that interplay, if you will, with the audience. And I always tell people this is not a game of perfection mm-hmm. because there is that post-production moment where I can take the 5 cameras that have been on you and fix something if something went really wrong. And that's the beauty of seeing the live event, is you get to see it sort of raw. When you see the edited talks online, you see the more perfection. We don't do a lot of editing in Columbus. The Big Ted is very, they'll spend 8 to 10 hours per talk on a post-production edit. Making sure angles are at the right place, close-ups for intimate conversation and story and wide angle for an audience response. And we're not that specific, even though the good folks at WSU who capture the video are terrific, taking nothing away from them. But
so. I have 2 more 6-minute memoirs, 6-word memoirs. I only have 2 minutes to go. From Galen, I broke my neck and lived. And from Dave, Ruth Milligan makes my heart smile.
That was
that must
husband.
Be the guy who broke the plastic chair.
I have to stay on the stage every year. I'm still married to Dave, not Ted. That was the first year. He was like, are you married to this guy named Ted?
Well, thanks to everybody for their submissions of their 6-word memoirs. Please continue to submit them throughout the day. I'm sure Ruth's already checked them out once. They'll check them out. We'll check them out. We'll share them. TEDx Columbus Women will take place on Thursday, May 28th at the Southern Theater. For more information, you can go to our website. We have a link there for your edification. Melissa Crum, founder of Mosaic Education Network, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
So glad to make your dreams come true.
Yay!
And Larry Smith, founder of Smith Magazine and the 6-Word Memoir Project, thanks to you as well.
Thanks, Anne.
And Ruth Milligan, as always, thanks for everything you do for Columbus and thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us, Anne. It's
Ruth
always
Milligan,
fun.
TEDx Columbus co-founder and organizer. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.